dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is one of our special editions on our effort to provide briefings on the war for the free world, as I like to call it, because we are in the front lines of the war for the free world, at least the intellectual front lines. Those here at the Conservative Political Action Conference in Orlando, Florida, and I'm very pleased to have caught up with a couple of good friends, the first of which is with me now. His name is Robert Charles, no stranger to these microphones for sure, but it's always delightful to be able to see him in person as well as to hear his sonorous voice talking about some of the most important topics of our time, and we're going to do that with him today. He is the former Assistant Secretary of State under the George W. Bush administration, responsible for the portfolio of narcotics and law enforcement affairs. He has served in a number of other capacities, including as a naval intelligence officer, as well as a counsel for congressional matters in the Reagan and George H.W. Bush White Houses. He is these days a spokesman for a wonderful organization. We hope to talk with some of its other leaders, the Association for Mature American Citizens, AMAC, and you can follow him at amac.us. Robert Charles, welcome. It's always good to have you with us.
It is great, Frank, to be with you here at CPAC. This place is hopping, exciting, lots and lots of good ideas and good people out here. And I hearken back as I think about your introduction, and I thank you for it, to the idea that you have led this program for so long in a war of ideas, a war for freedom and for free speech and for freedom around the world. You know, and the truth is, it could never be more pertinent than it is right now.
Arguably more critical to at least make sure that people are aware of our situation. So let's talk about SITREP, if I may.
Yes.
Ukraine. As we speak, Vladimir Putin's invasion continues and is intensifying. You shared with me just now some rather grim news about his assault on the capital city. Kyiv, I guess, is what we're calling it now. I always thought of it as Kiev until recently. What's going on, and what does it portend?
You know, this is a poignant question, and it isn't just tactical, and it isn't just for today. It has much, I think the repercussions will last for decades. So what's happening at this exact moment that we know just from a combination of public and private news feeds is that what we thought was perhaps an incursion that would involve intimidation and two oblasts to the south and the Crimea and solidification of a prior incursion has turned into something much larger than that already. Whether this is 1938 and the taking of the Sudetenland and some sort of new progression with appeasement from the West of sorts, we don't know yet. But what we do know is that it's gone to the point now where they're bombarding, missiling, and moving directly, by the way, on the ground for Kyiv, the capital city. So what is Kyiv? Kyiv is a 1,000-year-old city. It's one of the most beautiful and most significant cities in the Western, arguably in the Western world. It is it's the seventh most populous city in Europe. It's 3 million people, and it's got some of the most gorgeous aspects of Christian history to it and with it. I mean, anyone who knows anything about classical music, for example, would know Tchaikovsky and Mussorgsky. Mussorgsky, one of Mussorgsky's probably greatest works is called Pictures at an Exhibition, and one of the most poignant, just fills your eyes with tears, components of that is The Bells of Kyiv. And it's just to think that Putin has just decided he's going to shell the hell out of that city is just, it sort of turns the stomach. So implications downstream, I think this is a battle, coming back to the war for the free world, This is really a battle of ideas. This is communist China together with autocratic Russia, led by a former communist KGB agent, seeking to assert dominance in the free world and over the free world. And our job now is to be men and women of courage, and to say that will not stand, as Ronald Reagan, our former boss, would have said.
And yet, at the moment, you wouldn't necessarily make a book on it won't stand.
That's a good
talk
point.
A bit about what, we'll get to the Chinese in a minute, but what about the Europeans? What about the U.S. leadership of NATO, of the Western world, really, in this war for the free world?
It's a very interesting, you know, metaphor to try to, you know, sort of come to my mind in terms of what we're witnessing and the tightness of the conflict between Russia and the West. And when I say tightness, I mean we're not in a world anymore where some kind of an event triggers a delayed reaction. Everything is fast, fast, fast. The op tempo is not only fast, but increasing. And, you know, it's almost like two political philosophies that have a gun to each other's head right now. We have to keep, and this is why I say this, we must keep our Western allies at our sides. We should be vocally leading every minute of every day. The phones should be burning up with a high energy president trying to make this happen and hold people together and frankly build a coalition that becomes global, not just Western European. But we're not doing that, obviously. Why do I say that? Because these Western, when we put sanctions, as we rightly should, and we should crank them up, I think they should include financial sanctions, which could trigger an alternate kind of yen-based. There could be an attempt to change the whole global financial system by Russia and China, but I don't think that would succeed as long as you have a very strong coalition of free markets that oppose it. But we should be putting heavy sanctions on them, remembering, though, that if we deliver very heavy sanctions to Russian oil companies, which are essentially the largest part of their economy, we are going to see counter sanctions emerge for sure. And the reason I say that is that Europe, we've allowed Europe, and Europe has allowed itself to become dependent on Russian oil. So what does that mean? It means they get at least 30% of their oil from Russia. They get at least 40% of their natural gas from Russia. Donald Trump and others said, no, we ought to open up LNG ports. We ought to be energy independent and then help Europe become dependent on us so that they don't end up pivoting politically toward Russia. But that's the big picture. The big picture is that we are at risk of losing allies. So we need to be leading, not following.
There seem to be two really important takeaways from what you've just said and sort of the picture more generally. And that is, one, we need urgently to reverse every single one of Joe Biden's steps on energy.
Absolutely.
The damage that he has done. Absolutely. And restore both the energy security of the United States as well as our ability to help our allies, among other things. With
Absolutely
energy.
Right.
And, oh, by the way, the pipeline from Israel ought to be pursued aggressively, too. There's another way in which we can diversify energy supplies to our key allies in Europe. The second is, Bobby, and having served in uniform as well as in senior positions in the civilian side of the government, I know you appreciate this particularly. We need to stop Joe Biden's war against the United States military.
Well, that's another good point.
It is the only one we have, for heaven's sakes, and it seems like the way things are going, we're going to need it more than ever.
And two thoughts there. One is that, you know, you can lose from within as well as losing from without. And we need to be aware that the men and women in uniform today, and this statistic will shock listeners, the men and women in uniform today on active duty represent, this is a fact, less than 1% of our population. And all the veterans alive today from World War II, Korea, Vietnam, First Gulf War, Afghanistan, Iraq, and any veteran that lives, if you take them all together, they, in the United States, they represent less than 7% of our population. So the first thing you have to do is you have to protect, defend, believe in, give gratitude to, honestly understand the sacrifices associated with those who put, we used to say it, who signed the page too. You worked in the Pentagon, who say, yeah, my life is yours. I'm going to give it if needed. The second thing that I think we really have to do is understand that the threat from without is also extremely powerful. And you can have, and we do have, the most powerful military in the world. But if you don't have the political will to use that military, then you might as well have nothing at all. And that's a real question mark. And that's obviously why Putin and Xi believe this is their moment, maybe the best moment in 50 years, to be able to take things.
Let me turn to Xi, if we can. Xi Jinping,
yes.
The dictator of China. He has made no secret of his intent to secure for China Taiwan. How he will go about that, the exact timing of it, the destructiveness that will be involved, notably, particularly of the sort of economic power of China,
Taiwan.
The economic power of Taiwan, much of which is represented by its production of very high quality silicon chips. But what it seems increasingly now in prospect, and you've suggested as much, is this is his moment. However he chooses to.
And I think you're right. And, you know, we those of us who, and you are, incomparably focused and astute on China, but those of us who focus on this particular issue sometimes have a hard time thinking of some new way to say what is happening and how near-term the threat is to freedom and to, in particular, this free ally of ours who has been critical for decades. And represent, you know, they were the freedom loving nationalists who fled from, you know, the contest with the communists, and the communists prevailed under Mao. But there's something big and new happening right now, and it's worth noting, and it puts Taiwan at added danger. And here's the added danger. The added danger is that ultimately what Putin has done for China is lower the bar of tolerance for mass violence. So with a contiguous country. So that suggests to me that Taiwan should be nervous, more nervous, and we, on their behalf, should be both nervous and prepared.
Well, it goes, obviously, to the very heart of, are we doing either adequately? Are we taking our eye off this ball? Are we signaling by inaction or other more subtle messaging that they're right? To calculate that Joe Biden is not up to this job, and even if he were, that their compromise of him, whether you're talking about the Chinese or, for that matter, the Russians, is sufficient to ensure that there will really not be the kinds of costs that might even give them pause.
So again, excellent.
A lot of this is a function of what we've seen happening. Yeah.
Excellent point. So the best militaries in the world and the best intelligence communities in the world work hard at what they call red teaming, as you know. And that is to put yourself inside the mind of your enemy. Sun Tzu, of course, a Chinese, did the same thing. And you look at this and you say, if I am them, what decisions would I make based on the world that I see through it, their eyes? And this would be a very opportune moment to move on Taiwan.
Sure.
Are we preparing and prepared? No, I don't think we are. And, you know, I'm reminded of, I used to read a lot of the old Agatha Christie's and the old Sherlock Holmes stories. And I can't remember which of them, but one story in which what happens is that the giveaway is that the dog doesn't bark. Okay?
Sherlock Holmes.
And so here we are, you know, we're looking through Chinese eyes and you say, gosh, you would have thought that they would have done this, this, and this, but the dog didn't bark and it didn't bite. And so if it didn't bark and didn't bite, it might not bite me. So I better take my risks now.
And as you know, as a serious student of these things, Bobby, miscalculations often conduce to war. And you may find yourself getting into this because they calculate that, and it turns out maybe
that's
it won't
right.
be, but still.
That's right.
Every effort should be made now to signal in the most unmistakable terms, both that we have the power and the will to prevent an attack on Taiwan.
That's right.
Let me pivot to another calculation that's going on, I'm sure, in the minds of these adversaries of the United States and the free world. And that's what they're witnessing. And I am pretty sure aiding and abetting behind the scenes, for that matter. The evolution, if you want to call it that, or fundamental transformation, I think is how Barack Obama would put it, of the Anglosphere. Notably, New Zealand, Australia, most recently Canada, to some extent Britain, and for heaven's sakes, what we're doing here as well, which suggests that we are at a minimum susceptible to the kinds of transformations that the Marxists seek. And at the very best, we are now riven to a point where we're not likely to be able to mount much of a concerted pushback against them.
So let
your
me,
thoughts on that, yeah, particularly on the Canadian situation, yeah, which is just kind of mind-blowing.
It is. So let me give you, I want to, the word riven is an excellent word to introduce into the dialogue here. Yes, the West and this country and many of our allies internally and collectively are riven. We are divided on ourselves, and I'm reminded that, you know, the old adage, I don't remember if it was Caesar or whoever, the divide and conquer as a technique, it is a physical technique. It is also an ideological technique, which is to say, if you can divide people on themselves and you can cause them to doubt themselves, then you make it very easy to prevail over them. And Canada, you know, what we're seeing, I'll just use Canada as an example. Here you have the people stepping up and saying, stop abusing our rights. We have a right to make decisions for ourselves. And you have a what now is a sort of progressively, acceleratingly, to, I don't want to say, let's just say, overreaching government that is suppressing those rights with a sense of, almost a sense of well, lack complete lack of accountability, but a sense of indifference to the fact that this is completely opposite the history of this entire continent. And you could see it here, and you certainly have begun to see it in Australia, and you probably saw it even earlier in New Zealand. You know, all it takes, again, you know, we all know Edmund Burke, and all it takes for evil to prevail is for good people to do nothing. And that means, by the way, forget your history. Yeah, so, no, don't forget your history. Understand that you have these rights. Go back and look, and you know, 150 countries around the world happen by no coincidence to have our Constitution and our Bill of Rights. So making them real is not a matter of reading the sheet of paper. It's a matter of standing up with courage, as the truckers did in Canada, and saying, no, this is not going to prevail here. We are the people. You work for us. We don't work for you. And that's going to have to happen here, too.
From your lips to God's ears, Robert Charles. Let me turn to one last topic, and that is a subject that you've written about at AMAC.us recently, which really is a perfect segue from what you just described, the need for us to remember who we are, that we do have a constitution, that it does guarantee us certain inalienable rights. We've begun to see John Durham, a federal special prosecutor, laying out the outlines, at least, of a case that there was a conspiracy mounted by the Hillary Clinton campaign in 2016 to, in the first instance, prevent the popular will from being expressed for Donald Trump, and then once he did win, notwithstanding those efforts, to try to destroy his presidency.
You're so right.
Share with us what, again, the implications of that would be if true, and are proven shortly by him, hopefully in a court of law.
So let me say, Durham is known for being slow and thorough, and also, frankly, being nonpartisan. So the fact that this filing came forward that strongly implicates the Clinton campaign and others, it is a very profound document. And of course, the mainstream media largely tried to ignore it. But the implications of not defending the Constitution in courts of law, obviously, are very high, very significant. But you could go one step further, and I, to draw sort of a visual picture for your listeners, you know, when the sun was high and there was a lot to see in the high sun, the shadow cast by any individual event was hard to discern. But this has taken a long time, and the sun is low on the horizon with this investigation. And now the shadow cast by that small, you know, spike, if you will, is long. And I think that what's happening, what will come out of this from Durham, may be way more significant than people realize. Indeed, if you go to AMAC.us, and they've been very assiduous about following this, if you go to it, there is an article there that talks about really the earth-shaking elements of this finding. And again, this is not a man who speaks opinions. This is a man who bases his assertions, and when he avers something, he does it based on hard fact. So if I were them, if I were the Hillary Clinton crowd, all of them in a concentric circle around her, I'd be scared to death, including Biden.
Yeah. It is important to note, as you said, that the campaign had a role in this, and some of the people who were prominent in that campaign, allegedly, were involved are now in very senior positions.
Yes, they are.
Jake Sullivan being the prime example, but now the National Security Advisor to the President of the United States. And when you reflect on what Durham's begun, as I say, to lay out here, the actual conspiring with the Russians, among others.
Yeah.
It's a torturous thing to get your head around. What he is doing now, or could be doing now, in the midst of the kind of problem that we just talked about.
Yeah, I mean, I will simplify this and sort of create a one and a two. The one is that what happened after the campaign, when Trump won, was that this organization and these people appear to have continued to surveil, if we understand correctly what's inferred, to continue to surveil personal and professional elements of the White House. So first, the question is, who's doing that? And under what circumstances do we allow a White House to be penetrated? And then the question becomes, and it's a very real question as a former intelligence officer, what did the intelligence community know? Now, it may be that the intelligence community, this escaped them, and they knew nothing about this. So then the question is, exactly how did that happen? That you knew nothing about this campaign's continuing infiltration. If, on the other hand, they were complicit because they bought into some sort of campaign-driven ideology about Russia collusion, then how did that happen? And yes, the question then becomes, particularly under current circumstances, what does it mean that some of these people that are clearly in the line of fire of that filing are now in positions of power? It's not that there's a specific thing that I can point to, and it's not that I feel they necessarily are making decisions collateral or consistent with some of our adversaries, but it tells you a little bit about the craven nature of people that they would continue to surveil a White House that incidentally they had been trying to surveil apparently and trying to defeat by this surveillance, and it prevailed, and the American people voted Trump in. And then all of a sudden we find out now, years later, that even after that they were active. So I am looking forward with bated breath to see what Durham files next.
Me too. Well said, as always. Bobby Charles, thank you for your time today. Your concern about our counterintelligence capabilities is a topic to which I hope we can return with you soon, because it's endemic and so dangerous, I think, on so many different levels.
It is.
But thank you for your time. Thanks for being here at CPAC, and thanks for the great work you do at the Association for Mature American Citizens.
I appreciate it greatly.
AMAC.us. Next up, we will speak with the great Hans von Spakovsky about election integrity and what's to be expected next.
Thank you.
Straight ahead.
I'm Robert Muse, co-founder of the American Freedom Law Center, a national public interest law firm that fights for faith and freedom in federal and state courts across the country. Make no mistake, we are living in dangerous times. Left-wing progressives in government are assaulting our Constitution like no other time in the history of our great nation. Indeed, we hear politicians at the highest levels of government and a major political party espousing what they believe to be the benefits of socialism and the unrestrained growth of the federal government. Fortunately, our Constitution was designed to prevent tyranny and to protect liberty. It enshrines fundamental freedoms in the Bill of Rights, which was designed as a break on the power of government. In short, our Constitution was designed to protect private citizens like you and me from the tyranny of government. I can assure you that the American Freedom Law Center will do its part to hold tyrannical government officials accountable in our courts of law so that we, the people, remain a free people. You can support the important work of the American Freedom Law Center with a tax-deductible donation. Please visit our website at www.americanfreedomlawcenter.org.
Pure Freedom Minute. Overnight, Vladimir Putin went to full-on war in Ukraine. The Russian dictator is clearly set on nothing less than the conquest of that neighboring nation, demilitarizing it, changing its government, and dominating it henceforth in a manner reminiscent of the Kremlin's previous enslavement of Ukrainians and others during the Russian Empire and its Soviet counterpart. Regrettably, such aggression seems unlikely to end there. Putin and his partners in China, Iran, and North Korea appear to perceive a window of opportunity, thanks to weakness in Washington and the West more generally, to use violence to reorder things to their liking. In the face of such dangers, America must revert to a policy of peace through strength, aimed at demonstrating convincingly that the United States and its allies have the capacity and the will to counter aggressors forcefully, not just punish them economically. This is Frank Gaffney.
Night after night in cities across the country, black garbed assailants clash with police in the streets, smash windows, and throw Molotov cocktails in an effort to destroy police stations, federal courthouses, and local businesses, all in the name of anti-fascism. Most Americans are now, sadly, all too aware of the movement known as Antifa. But where did they come from? What do they want? And how do we stop their campaign of violent mayhem? The Center for Security Policy Press is proud to present Unmasking Antifa, Five Perspectives on a Growing Threat. This new book looks at the history, ideology, organization, finances, and strategy of Antifa, and provides an in-depth analysis for law enforcement officers, policymakers, and the general public. From street fighting tactics of the Black Bloc to fundraising by prominent left-wing foundations, Unmasking Antifa is the go-to guide to understand this elusive and dangerous threat. Get your copy of Unmasking Antifa, Five Perspectives on a Growing Threat at Amazon.com.
Back, and it's always a delight to be able to say we have the extraordinary Hans von Spakovsky in the room, literally here at CPAC, the Conservative Political Action Conference. He is working the broadcast row, and we're delighted that he's stumbled across us and come back to these microphones. Hans is a senior fellow at the Heritage Foundation, a former member of the Federal Elections Commission, and also an assistant to, special assistant, as I recall, to an assistant attorney general.
That's right.
On
civil rights issues.
That portfolio. A fabulous resource and a great friend. And we're delighted to have him here.
Well, Frank, it's a very nice to see you in person.
It's always great to be able to do that. Hans, so much to talk with you about. As we speak, the President of the United States has announced his nominee for the vacancy that he seemed to have created by breaking the knees of Stephen Breyer.
Right.
Let's start, before we get to the individual, by just setting the predicate. How was this individual selected? And was this basically the way it normally is done, or is it a little anomalous?
No, I think it was anomalous. Look, he announced that he was only going to consider a black woman. So he was specifying the race and gender of the nominee. And, you know, if a CEO of a private company did that, they would immediately get sued, quite properly so, under the Civil Rights Act.
Right.
Because it's illegal.
Right.
And, yeah, that statute doesn't apply to the president for constitutional reasons. But it is, what is the example that he is setting for people throughout the country? And, you know, what he should have been doing is saying...
Answer that question.
The example he's giving is that discrimination is okay. And, of course, we see that with the kind of racial spoil system the left wants to bring back everywhere, including, for example, in college admissions, saying it's actually okay to discriminate on the basis of race.
Would you go so far as to say that this is Jim Crow?
Yeah, I think
they've just flipped the races.
I think it's the newest version of it. We thought we had gotten rid of, both legally and from a moral standpoint, the idea that discrimination was okay during the civil rights movement, important court decisions like Brown versus Board of Education. And now the left is bringing it back. They're just changing who gets to benefit and who's discriminated.
So there is something... well, rotten, it seems to me, about the way in which this individual was selected.
Yes.
Talk about her credentials and whether that strikes you as also problematic.
Well, last year she was...
Tell her name.
I'm sorry. Ketanji Brown Jackson.
There we go.
Last year she was nominated to the District of Columbia Federal Court of Appeals and confirmed, but the only reason she was confirmed was because three nominal Republicans crossed the line to vote for her. Susan Collins, Lisa Murkowski of Alaska, and Lindsey Graham. She was
nominal being the operative
word. Well, she was so bad that the entire rest of the Republican caucus voted against her, including Mitt Romney. Okay. She is probably the most left-wing ideologue ever nominated to the United States Supreme Court. Look, you concentrate a lot on national security measures. She was a public defender at one point in the District of Columbia. Now, Frank, you and I both know, what's the job of the public defender in D.C.? Well, it's to defend residents there who are charged with, you know, shoplifting. No, she felt it the need to go down to Guantanamo Bay and use public tax dollars as a public defender to defend a terrorist detainee in Guantanamo Bay.
A little out of her jurisdiction.
I would think so.
Probably,
just to give you another
quick
example, if I may, when she was in private practice, she filed an amicus brief in a case saying that there should be a huge buffer zone around abortion clinics in Massachusetts where the First Amendment just doesn't apply. Yet, as a judge, she signed on to an opinion throwing out the D.C. panhandling law, saying it violated the First Amendment. So if you're protesting abortion, you have no First Amendment rights. But if you're begging on the streets, you have a First Amendment right. What does that tell you about how ideology drives her, not the law, not the Constitution?
So with three nominal Republicans having voted for her recently,
yes,
Hans, does this look like it's a lock for the president?
Unfortunately, it may well be. I hope they reconsider their opinions, particularly when they see the opinion she has signed on to as a Court of Appeals judge and the opinion she just issued, her first written opinion, by the way, in which she said the government couldn't limit the bargaining power of public sector unions, which is ridiculous because the only way you can form a union with public employees is if the government says it's okay.
Yeah, of course. I just want to pause on this point. You say her first written opinion. Does that mean as a judge in her entire life?
Yeah, I mean, she signed on to other opinions as judges, but this is the one she actually
personally was responsible for.
Right, in favor of the AFL-CIO.
I understand that the American Bar Association's vetting has not been requested by this administration. And I know the previous administration did so for different reasons. But would you expect someone with these kinds of credentials to get a passing mark from even a fairly left of center outfit like the ABA?
Yeah, because of the fact that the ABA long ago lost its moorings, become a very leftist organization. There's been plenty of cases in the past where they have poorly rated highly qualified conservative nominees, and it was very clear that it had nothing to do with their qualifications, but everything to do with ideology.
Let me turn to the issue of a very troubling finding recently released by John Durham,
right,
a special prosecutor, evidently, against my expectations, frankly, doggedly pursuing.
That's the word.
What we think has happened in this country, namely the Hillary Clinton machine engaging in criminal activity to try to, well, in the first instance, get her elected president, in the second instance, undermine the man who beat her, Donald Trump.
Right.
You've written about this at, I think, Daily Signal.
I did.
Hans, yes. Talk about what we have learned so far and what you think it might mean for where John Durham goes next.
Well, folks should remember, Michael Sussman used to be a lawyer at a big D.C. firm, a Democratic firm named Perkins Coie. This is the same firm that represented Hillary Clinton's campaign in 2016 and represents lots of Democrats. Anyway, Sussman was indicted for lying to the FBI. Why? Because he's the guy who went to the FBI and fed them this false story about the Trump campaign having secret communications and connections with a Russian bank, which turned out to be completely not true. Okay. And when
among
he was
other things completely
right,
not true
right.
about what
and when he was asked, well, you know, who's your client? He basically said, oh, I'm just a good citizen giving you this. But it turned out his campaign was representing the Clinton campaign. So he lied to the FBI about this. Well, now
his company was.
Yeah. So recently, John Durham made a filing raising conflict of interest questions about the law firm that's representing Sussman defending him. The reason being that they're also representing this high tech executive who, it turned out, uses connections in the internet world to scoop up the internet traffic at Trump Tower and at Trump's apartment in Central Park in New York during the 2016 campaign. Not only that, but it turns out he also had a contract with the White House to provide certain services to them. And once Trump became president, he did the same thing. He exploited his access to scoop up the track. And the filing says, what was the intention of this? To gather derogatory information about Donald Trump. And when he was asked why he did it, he said, to impress VIPs at the Perkins Coie law firm and the Clinton campaign.
All right, so let me make sure I understand this. Illegal activity during the campaign, and then not just illegal activity, it would seem, but potentially extremely dangerous activity for the national security of the United States after the campaign was over and Donald Trump was in the White House.
Yeah, I'm just shocked that a company that was providing services to the computer network of the White House basically breached its security and used that access to scoop up internet traffic. And as for legality, yeah, the Computer Fraud and Abuse Act, federal law, makes it a crime up to 10 years in prison for accessing a government computer without authorization, or if you have authorization, exceeding that authorization. That's clearly what happened.
So much more to talk about on this, and I guess we're just going to have to basically watch this space to see what Durham is going to do about it. Any thoughts on where what he has done so far must lead?
He's being very methodical about this, and really? There's a lot of material, a lot of people he's talking to. I expect we're going to hear more about this.
All right. Staying tuned, and with your help, Hans von Spakovsky, who we call HVS around here. Listen, very quickly, one last question.
Yeah.
You have been following very closely and engaging very helpfully on the issue of principally Democratic-led efforts to legislate election integrity arrangements, if I could use that expression, that seem much more like those of the 2020 campaign, rather than real election integrity.
Right.
Where does that stand, very quickly, if you can tell me?
Their effort in Congress to basically legislate against elections that have passed good election reform bills, like Texas, Georgia, Florida. Those lawsuits are in the courts. Hopefully, those states are fighting back, and hopefully they will win.
Again, we'll be following this closely with your help, Hans. Thank you for your leadership.
Sure, right.
You've got tremendous expertise on the subject, books, as well as your service on the Federal Election Commission. You are our go-to guy on it. Thank you for joining us today. Come back soon.
Thanks for having me.
God bless you. Enjoy CPAC.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Decapitation is a graphic way of describing the evident object of Vladimir Putin's intensifying invasion of Ukraine. Unfortunately, if this despot can get away with not only eliminating an elected government of one of Russia's neighbors, but presumably installing one to his liking there, other enemies of freedom will surely be emboldened to do the same. Former President Trump warns that Russia's twin sister, Communist China, will be next to act on Beijing's long-standing ambition to extend its enslaving misrule to Taiwan. The question now is, can such calculations, whether by the Chinese Communist Party or other thugs allied with Russia and China, still be influenced? That will depend in part on whether endangered governments are convinced that they will be better supported than we have those of Afghanistan and now Ukraine, or whether they should simply surrender preemptively to freedom's enemies. This is Frank Gaffney.
History was made on today's date. Stay tuned for an American Minute with Bill Federer.
Our institutions of freedom will not survive unless they are constantly replenished by the faith that gave them birth, stated Secretary of State John Foster Dulles, who was born this day, February 25, 1888. A graduate of Princeton, he helped negotiate the peace treaty with Japan after World War II and served as U.S. ambassador to the UN. John Dulles remarked, "Man has his origins and destiny in God. Our institutions reflect the belief that all men were endowed by their Creator with inalienable rights, that human institutions ought to help men develop their God-given possibilities."
This has been an American Minute with Bill Federer. For a free transcript, call American Minute at 1-888-USA-WORD.
Indiana, a man who has risen to prominence most recently through his chairmanship of the House Republican Study Committee, really important body, the largest body of conservatives in the United States Congress. And under his leadership, I think it's got its footing back, which, sorry to say, seemed not to have so much for some time. He has served his country in the uniform, I believe, of the United States Navy.
That's right.
Among other places in Afghanistan.
Afghanistan.
He has, of course, been working in the halls of Congress on a whole host of issues, but one that we're particularly keen on is the leadership he's brought to the issue of the threat posed to this country by the Chinese Communist Party and the fact that most of us are still, even after, well, I consider it to have been a biological warfare attack was visited upon us, we fail to appreciate the full dimensions of the threat from the unrestricted warfare of the CCP. So, Congressman, first of all, thank you for the leadership.
Great to be with you, Frank. Thanks for all that you do and all that you stand for as well. It inspires the rest of us.
Well, thank you very much for that. Let me ask you about the body of work that I think you were instrumental in putting together under partly, I guess, the study committee's authority, but the leadership of the Republicans in the House. A year or so ago, you mapped out a really impressive array of recommendations for changes in U.S. policy. How's it going in affecting those changes?
I wish I had a better answer for you, Frank. I mean, with these Democrats in control, there has been no energy at all behind confronting the greatest threat that America faces today, which is communist China. There's a lot of talk this week about Ukraine, and that's really important. But the biggest reason that it's important is because China is watching. They are watching the weakest president and commander-in-chief we have ever had in the White House operate and handle a catastrophic situation with Russia invading Ukraine and not doing anything about it. Yesterday, Biden did a major head fake with these sanctions. Unfortunately, it wasn't a head fake toward Putin. It was a head fake to the American people. He signed sanctions that the more you read into these sanctions, the more you realize that they don't do anything at all.
Smoke and mirrors.
It's all smoke and mirrors. They carved out anything related to Russia's energy sector at a time when we should be crippling China's oil and gas industry. That was carved completely.
Russia.
Russia. At a time when we should be going after Russia's oil and gas. The sanctions completely carved that out. So China is watching. They're seeing weakness. They have been meeting and coordinating with Russia in all of this. And this morning, both Xi and Putin met and spoke again. They put out a statement in the last couple of days, and their statement was significant. Their statement said, "Ukraine belongs to Russia. Taiwan belongs to China. So make no doubt about it, what's happening in Russia has direct impact on a rising China. And China's goals are a lot different than Russia's goals. I mean, China wants to become the hegemonic power. They want to control the rest of the world and dominate the United States of America. And right now they know they have a president in the White House who's going to let them get away with it.
I want to just tease out that last point because I think it's really important. Clearly, this won't end well for Russia. Maybe on Vladimir Putin's watch, maybe après moi le déluge, as they say, somebody else's. But China is going to take parts of Russia.
That's
I
right.
Think there's no doubt about it. They've already got large numbers of Chinese in Siberia, for example, as you know. Do you have any thought as to what it is that Putin is reckoning? Is it just a marriage of convenience for the moment to sort of work his efforts to build out his empire? And
yes,
the devil take the
hindmost? Unholy alliance between the axis of evil that exists today, not just Russia and China, but Iran as well. You have a rising Iran who's closer than ever before to achieving a nuclear weapon program in their country as the Biden administration re-enters talks into the JCPOA, the disastrous Iran nuclear deal. So, but why does it matter? It matters because in that relationship, that unholy alliance, the axis of evil between those three countries, China is the one that's controlling the rest of them. So when you see Russia make a move like they have, they did it with the tacit approval of China. Xi told Putin to wait until after the Olympics, and that's exactly what he did.
Yeah. I'm not even sure it's so tacit. I think, especially in any secret protocols to that agreement they issued, it was probably laid out. Do it after the, and we're all in. And presumably, the quid pro quo is Russia is going to support China in taking Taiwan, not just
that's
its
right.
title to it.
That's what we should be fearing in this moment. A lot of talk about sending troops to Ukraine or American troops to Europe. That's exactly what China wants to happen. They want America to get involved in another Afghanistan. They want America to overextend itself. They're watching America decline already, but they want us to decline even more by entering into conflicts like this one. That's good for China. We have to be aware of that. We have to be very, very careful about that. But at the end of the day, the common sense solution, what would get not just Putin's attention, but Xi's attention as well, is to sanction Putin directly, remove Russia from the SWIFT international banking system, go after all of the oligarchs around Putin that prop him up, and then isolate Russia's energy sector. Those types of tough sanctions will not just get Putin's attention, but it speaks loudly to China as well.
Let me come back to your own legislative efforts, Congressman, because I think they are so important, and especially as we see this, well, epical election looming. It does seem to me this is the kind of defining issue for the November choice that the public has to make. And we're not getting into the partisan politics here, but as I've shared with you elsewhere, been very imprinted by Ronald Reagan's efforts to secure from the American people in the run-up to the 1980 campaign a mandate. At that time, to take down the Soviet Union, the last totalitarian communist system that was trying to destroy us. And he got that mandate by running on it, and then he acted on it when he was elected. Do you see this as, you've indicated that there was a stark difference with the Democrats in the Congress on these issues. Do you see this as potentially being that kind of real choice that needs to be presented as, you know, clearly as possible in this
election
season?
It's a clear choice. I think about this every day. I mean, with what we had for 4 years under Donald Trump, who echoed so well the Reagan-era peace through strength mantra versus the weakness and appeasement that we see every day on Joe Biden's watch. There is not a single day that Joe Biden has been in office when the world was more safe and secure than when Donald Trump was in office. That is a fact. And the American people get it. They see it. But when Reagan talked about peace through strength, as you well know, he wasn't just talking about a strong military. He was talking about a strong America. And what we're watching right now, the decline of living standards, in America, the decline of our standard of living, the decline of America on Joe Biden's watch means that we're not in a position of strength, projecting a position of strength around the world. Is just the opposite. And that, make no mistake about it, it's not an accident that Putin is invading Ukraine today, that China will invade Taiwan tomorrow and the days to come. They were waiting for a weak-kneed leader like Joe Biden to do exactly this. They knew they didn't have it with Donald Trump in the White House. They know they have it today, and that's why the timing is so so relevant, and why I think the American people get it. They get it. They feel it. They see it. They know that Joe Biden is to blame, and I think there's going to be a big price to pay for Democrats in the midterm election because of it.
We shall see. Let me ask you, in closing, very quickly. I worry that it's not just weakness or incompetence, for that matter, and people tend to attribute these kinds of, well, disasters, including Afghanistan, to one or the other of those. I fear that in part it is actually a function of the co-option, the actual compromise of the President of the United States. And again, you've served in uniform as well as in the Congress. You know how important for anybody in the chain of command south of him it is that you actually can pass your background checks, for example. This man could never pass a background check, given the compromises by his family and arguably the big guy himself. I just ask you, when you look at the dangers to our country, if the Chinese Communist Party, maybe they're wrong, but let's just say for the purpose of discussion, they think they actually own Joe Biden, would that not be a factor in their calculations as to whether they can get away with murder?
I think this is so important. It's a question that millions of Americans are asking. It's a question that I'm asking. Hunter Biden and the Biden family got so filthy rich with business dealings in these countries that we're now seeing all of a sudden become the hot spots in the world, our biggest adversaries who are working against American interests.
A remarkable correlation, doesn't there?
These are questions that demand answers. And I know that next January is a long ways off. We can't wait that long. But when we get the majority back and Jim Jordan is chairman of the Judiciary Committee, I hope one of the first things we do is haul Hunter Biden before the committee and question him about these business dealings, because it is relevant. It does matter. And these questions deserve answers. And make no mistake about it, everything that the Biden administration done has not, it's not, there have been no accidents. It's not an accident that they've opened the border wide open. It's not an accident that inflation is the worst that it's been in 40 years. It's not an accident that from their crime, their anti-police agenda to the debacle in Afghanistan, it's all been intentional.
The energy sector.
It's all been intentional, a direct result of their policies, and they need to be held accountable
for it. I call it a wrecking operation, because I think that's the thing that is the connective tissue. It explains why everything, seemingly everything, is going wrong. Congressman Jim Banks, terrific to talk with you. I've wanted to do this for a long time, and it's
likewise
great to do it in person here at CPAC, and I hope we'll be able to do this
great
again in the
you
near future.
Thank you,
sir, for your time and your service. Keep it up, sir.
Come back to you soon.
You've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.